Solitaire Rose Novelcast, All In, Part 2. Is the second novel for Solitaire Rose Novelcast. So, what you need to know going into part two. Our hero, Johnny, had saved up from high school till the end of college to be in a poker tournament. He had saved $10,000, and he and his girlfriend, Dawn, had driven down to Tulsa. He'd entered the poker tournament and been knocked out on the very first hand. We pick up right after that. Chapter 2. The cab ride to his hotel room was a blur, and he was shocked that they gave the cab driver the right hotel name. He walked in through the lobby, still in a daze, unable to access the gravity of what had happened. By the time he got to his room, he realized he was still holding the cardboard box he'd been given his chips in, and was clutching it to his chest as if it were a beloved teddy bear. He looked around on the floor for a garbage can. Finding none, he saw that there was a room service tray that was filled with plates, cloth napkins, and other assorted things he could use to hide the box. He picked up a couple of the plates to try and slide the box under things when the metal covers for the plates fell to the ground with a loud crash. "Damn it," he said. Then he heard someone in the room next to the cart start to stir. He tossed the cardboard box under the plates and quickly ran to the small alcove where the elevator was and hoped that no one would look too far for whoever made the mess. He waited there for a minute, and when he didn't hear anything, he allowed himself to breathe, and then went to his own room. When he opened the door, he saw Dawn lying there on the bed, wearing her favorite set of cotton pajamas. She was laying on her back, a book in her hand, and the TV was playing classical music somehow. She looked over at him, surprised, and said, "You're done for the day already?" He did everything he could not to show any emotion as he said, "Yeah." He came into the room, enough to let the door close behind him. She caught a concerned look on her face and sat up, patting the bed beside her. "I know they let the tournament go on for more than an hour, so I'm guessing you have bad news." "The worst," he said quietly, not moving from being just inside the doorway. "I know you're upset and confused, but when someone pats the bed next to them, they are inviting you to sit down next to them, not stand next to the bathroom in shock," she said. "What?" he said, genuinely confused, not understanding what she'd said. The expression on her face went from one of gentle teasing to one of concern. She slid off the bed, came over to him, and grabbed him by the hand, leading him to the huge bed that dominated the hotel room. She quickly grabbed the remote control for the TV and switched it off, ending the light violin music that had filled the room. "What happened?" she said. "It was the first hand of the tournament," he started. "Honey, darling, sweetheart, love of my life, you know I love you more than anything," she started, "but if this is going to turn into a play-by-play of all the hands you played, then my ability to pay attention is going to fade rather quickly. There's a reason I bring a book to the poker nights." "That's what I'm trying to tell you," he said, frustrated. "There was only one hand." "One hand?" she said, looking like she was in the exact same state of shock he had entered the room in. "Yeah, I had the best possible hand, and this complete moron went all in. I called him, and I was beating him. I had trip kings, he had trip tens. I was 98% to win going to the river, and he pulled the one card that could have given him a four of a kind." "One hand?" she asked. "I could have doubled up, and when I saw his cards, I knew I'd made the right decision. It was dumb luck. Dumb, stupid luck." They both sat there in silence for a while. It seemed longer than it really was, and it ended when Dawn said, "I wish there was something I could say to make this all right, but I know there isn't. I keep replaying it over and over my head," Johnny said, "but every time I come back to the same conclusion. I would play it the same way, every time. I was getting the right pot odds. The player was showing me he didn't know how to play. I got my money in with the best possible hand. Maybe I should have played a little tighter, but when someone makes a mistake that big, you have to jump on it. The only way to win is to be aggressive. Shh, she said, putting a finger to his mouth. It's pointless to keep going over it again and again in your head. You played the best you could, and you are one of hundreds of people who won't be at the final table. We can think of this as a vacation and have a nice time. I don't know how to break this to you, little carrot, but we're in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Tulsa and good times are exact opposites. She gave one of her half smiles and said, there has to be something to do here. There's something to do everywhere, right? The only billboards I remember seeing were for fireworks, strip clubs, and churches, he said, wearily returning her smile. You'd think there'd be a place that combine all three. I'm thinking that there has to be a place where strippers are quoting scripture and waving sparklers. Now that sounds like a Saturday night to me, she said. And if we don't find that place, he said? There's always making fun of the rubes, she said. It's how we got through college in a town of 10,000 people. He shrugged his shoulders and fell back on the bed. She lay down next to him, her head on his chest. We could always stay here and let you wallow in self-pity. That might end up being a rocking good time. Yeah, he said quietly. They lay there in the hotel room, and he noticed it was still light outside. When he looked over at the clock, he saw it wasn't even 3 p.m. yet. Not only was he knocked out of the tournament he'd been dreaming of for years, he was now a little over 300 miles from home in a strange city he knew nothing about. He stroked Don's hair for a bit and said, I'm sorry. Shh, she said, no more poker talk. We're just going to stay here until you decide that you're hungry, then we're going to blow some of my money on a loud chain restaurant that offers the exact same food we could eat at home. After that, you're going to take me out to a movie, put your arm around me, and put up with a movie that has no explosions or gun battles. Then tomorrow we'll deal with this. In other words, he said, we're going to put off any serious discussion about how this affects our lives and our future plans and distract ourselves with food and mindless entertainment. I thought you had a degree in psychology. I do, she said. That's pretty shitty advice, he said. I went to a pretty shitty school, she replied. I love you, he said quietly. I love you too, she said quickly. And even though she said it and was snuggled up against him in the bed, he was worried. Later, he was up around 3 a.m, but didn't want to get out of bed. Dawn was lying against him, an arm over his chest as if she were claiming him as her own. She always called it marking her territory, and most nights he didn't even notice it. This night, however, it was heavy, a weight that was holding him down and making it so he couldn't move. He glanced at the window, which had its thick, dark curtains closed. There was a slight glow around the edge of the curtain from the street lights outside. He tried to use the light to get a good look at the hotel room, but it was just too dark for him to see anything other than the dim outlines of the desk and chairs next to the window. He wanted to get up and pace the floor. He wanted to go up and go back to the casino and take a couple $100 he still had for the trip, try and get into a side game, or even a satellite tournament, even though he knew that all the cash games would be for thousands, not hundreds, and the satellites were all done. He lay there in the dark, replaying the hand that had knocked him out over and over again. He spent time remembering each detail in painful exactness. Each time when he got to the moment where he walked out of the casino, the same thought still haunted him. What the hell was he going to do with his life now? Chapter 3 So, Kyle said, trying to sound comforting and failing, you were knocked out on the first hand, and Don didn't just kill you right there for losing $10,000 on a single hand of cards. No, she didn't kill me, Johnny said. However, I have a feeling that every argument we have over the next 50 years will result in it being brought up. That's kind of how it works. Plus, she also said that in return for her not yelling at me all the way home, she could use it in the future to win any disagreement that has to do with money, my stupidity, or my choice of career. Cal nodded. He was about as tall as Johnny and had a messy, curly shock of dark brown hair. His skin was incredibly pale. So much so that all through high school he was accused of being goth. He would respond by saying, No, I'm just Irish, and if I go out in the sun, I begin to throw off sparks. He was the only one home when Johnny got back, and they'd been sitting on the couch watching something on one of the cartoon channels when Kyle wondered how the trip had gone. It was pretty clear that Johnny wasn't a millionaire when he walked through the door, seeing as how Johnny had said that if he came in first place and won the $2.3 million that was projected as a grand prize, he would send his minions to pick up his stuff. When Johnny came in carrying his own bags, Kyle knew it. Things had not gone well. "Any other major fallout from it?" Kyle asked. Johnny winced and said, "She didn't say anything about it." "Nothing?" "Nothing." "That's not good." "I know. I spent the rest of the week wondering if she was going to say the fatal words, 'We need to talk.'" "Ouch," Kyle said, opening a beer. The living room to the house they rented looked exactly how you would expect if you knew that the house was being rented by four male college students. There were a few movie posters affixed to the wall with Chief Putty, smattering of furniture that was recovered from the resident halls after the students living in Chicago took off and left the cheap couches and chairs they'd bought for their dorm rooms behind, and a large 5-gallon bucket filled with ice from the closest gas station, and a 24-pack of the cheapest possible beer. There were two bedrooms downstairs that Johnny's other roommates, James and Rob, used. Upstairs were another small bedroom and the master bedroom. Since Johnny was the one who paid most of the bills and found the house, he got the big bedroom. Next to the living room was a large dining room and a kitchen that would have been fairly nice if the owner hadn't been renting the house to packs of college students over the past 25 years. Now it, as well as most everything else in the house, looked worn out and nearing a state where it would either be considered garbage or an antique. Either way, Johnny often said he would be happy when he moved out and got a better place so he could step up to squalor. Kyle offered him a beer and Johnny shook it off. "I think drinking would be the worst thing I could do." "You're wrong," Kyle said. "There are many worse things you could do. You could try and find another big tournament, tell Don you're putting everything on hold until you get into that one. Or you could develop a nice-sized drug habit. Or you could confess to me that you've been in love with me since we met in high school and you need to act on it right now." "Those could be worse, but I'm thinking that getting drunk in my mental state ranks at the same level as taking knitting needles and plunging them into my eyes." "Okay," Kyle said, "that would be a bad thing. Add to that you didn't say anything about how I subtly put it that you might want to join me on the other team. You are out of it." "You aren't my type," Johnny said. "I like my men like I like my coffee, hot, bitter, and for sale for $4 at Starbucks." Johnny looked around the room and saw his poker set sitting on one of the beat-up chairs. It looked out of place in the room, gleaming and shiny amidst the dull colors of the rest of the room. The chair was a faded brown, the walls were a sickly-looking dull green, and the carpet was a color mix that attempted to be the color of fall leaves, and instead looked like it had been made up of leftover fabric no one wanted to use. The poker case was aluminum, and inside were four different colored types of clay poker chips, a present from his parents a little over 2 years ago when he told them he was saving up for one of the big poker tournaments. They had always played poker, mostly five-card draw, and never for money. However, his senior year in high school, he and a group of his friends started playing poker for what little allowance they had, and he got hooked. The chips sat there, shining in his crappy little rental house. They looked out of place, and he couldn't help thinking that it had to be some kind of ham-fisted metaphor that he should heed. "It still leaves a question on the table," Kyle asked. "What are you going to do now?" "I've been asking myself that a lot. I still have my minimum wage job at the bookstore, so I'm able to pay rent and all." "But that's not going to last too long," Kyle reminded him. "The university bookstore only employs students, and at the end of the summer, you no longer qualify. You were lucky they let you stay on during the summer." "I'm sure there are lots of jobs out there for a..." Johnny paused. "What is my degree in again?" "Law enforcement?" Kyle asked. "No, I decided being a policeman doesn't mix too well with all the backroom poker games I was involved in. If I'm going to be a dirty cop, I should slide into it and be taking drug money or protection money, not ante some blinds." "Psychology? Was that it? I know you were reading a lot of books on figuring people out." "No, that was Dawn's major. We decided it wasn't a good idea for both of us to have a lot of classes together," Johnny said, remembering the one class they did take together, and how they each expected the other to pay attention while the other did homework for another class. "I know," Kyle said, jumping up from his seat. "It has something to do with math so that you could learn how to use pod odds, and all the other math stuff you say has something to do with poker." Johnny sighed loudly and theatrically. They have everything to do with poker. Poker is a game of math and odds. You learn how to play the odds, you become a better player. Then I'm thinking you didn't study very well based on the whole Tulsa thing, Kyle said, sitting back down. Fuck you. Repeatedly. With something large and sharp, Johnny said. Okay, it was accounting or something else boring like that. Correct, Johnny said. And while there aren't a lot of accounting jobs in this crappy little hellhole we call a city, there have to be some. Or some kind of management job where they just want you to have a degree so they know you can show up early in the morning after a night of heavy drinking. At that moment, the other two roommates got home. James was the shorter of the two and was wearing a pizza shirt from a rather large chain, dirty blue khakis, and what looked like an expensive format hat that did not fit the outfit at all. James also looked like he'd been eating pizza much longer than he'd been working there, but bounced into the house, a wide grin on his chubby face, and yelled, "The champ is here! More tips than any other worker for the 21st day in a row." Behind him was Rob, who was just as tall and thin as James was short and tubby. And he was wearing a shirt from Angelo's, a rival pizza place that didn't even have delivery service, but had been in town for over 50 years, serving sit-down Midwest versions of Italian meals, which meant pizza and pasta smothered in pizza sauce. "It's not a competition," Rob said in his much softer, calmer voice. "Besides, it's a Thursday, and no one goes out to eat on a Thursday." "Doesn't matter," James said, bouncing onto the couch and grabbing a can of beer as he passed. "I work all three nights this weekend, and you're going to continue to lose, which means you have to buy me beer this weekend." Does it strike anyone else as illogical that the person with less money has to buy something for the person who has the most money? Johnny asked. "No," James said confidently. "As a political science major, I think of it as a microcosm of how the U.S. economy works. The person who works smarter gets more money, and the people who suck don't have as much money and have to support those of us who are better off. That's the glory of unfettered capitalism." "Are you going to take that?" Johnny said to Rob. Rob shrugged and said, "Found it's not a good idea to argue with James. He may not have facts on his side, but he can stay up longer than I can, so that eventually I have to let him win so that I can get some sleep." "Damn skippy hippie," James said, cracking open the beer and slamming it without even taking a breath. Rob brushed his long hair out of his eyes and said, "There haven't been hippies in over 30 years. Why does long hair make me a hippie?" "And this is where I came in," Kyle said, turning the air conditioning up, not paying attention to the bickering roommates. "No one wants to know how I did at the tournament," Johnny said, tossing a cheap blanket from the floor on top of the poker set so he wouldn't have to look at it anymore. "Let me think about that," James said. Rob ran and stood next to him, and they posed, hands on their chin as if they were deep in thought. They stood like that for a few seconds, then looked at each other and said in unison, "I'm thinking no." They went back to what they were doing, and Rob said, "Becky said that you were knocked out on the very first hand. In fact, I'm pretty sure everyone you have ever known in your life has heard the story at least once. There may be a web page about it by this time, because Valerie thought it was the best story she'd ever heard in her life." "Great," Johnny said. Becky and Valerie were Don's friends, and if they knew, Rob was probably underestimating how fast the story had traveled around town. Val was a web designer. He was almost scared to look at her website, since she probably would have a big page highlighting his particular flame out. "Look on the bright side," Kyle said, not looking away from the TV. "All the people you've been beating at poker will now want to play you again because they think you suck now." James came back into the living room with a big bag of potato chips and grabbed another beer. "That's the plan, right? You're going to take the summer, make a ton of money, and try again before school starts again." Before Johnny could say anything, Kyle said, "Are you kidding? Don wouldn't put up with that. She'll kill him if he were to blow another $10,000 on a poker tournament." Rob came out of the kitchen with a couple of sandwiches and a handful of baby carrots on a plate. He flopped down on the couch next to Kyle and said, "She's not that big a bitch. If he could do it by the end of summer, I'm sure she'll be perfectly all right with it." "I'm not saying she's a bitch, but if he were able to put together that much money in 2 months, there's no way she'd let him blow it again," Kyle said. "I think he should give up on the whole tournament thing," James said, taking his time with his current beer. "You can make more money in home games and cash games. Most of the really good players don't care if they get knocked out early, since all the big money's in the cash games. They're going on in hotels around the tournament. Just start making money there, like in that movie, you know, where the guy has to make $15,000 in a single night or he gets killed." That movie was crap, Rob said. Not only did it make it look like you could just knock on any door and find a big money poker game, but it had Matt Damon in it. And there's a law that no movie with Matt Damon in it can ever be any good. I invoke the Kevin Smith exception, Kyle said, raising his hand. Having Kevin Smith in a movie automatically makes it good. Johnny walked out of the room and upstairs as their discussion had already gone from his poker failure to Kevin Smith movies and soon would wander off into directions that had nothing to do with him. As he heard their voices getting louder and James's booming laugh, he went into his bedroom and sat down at his desk. There, staring him in the face, were his diploma and a picture of Dawn. He thought about turning on the internet, but instead grabbed a handful of clay poker chips on the desk and began to shuffle them in his hand absently. Stacked in amazing disarray on his nightstand were books that he was supposed to have read in his last English class, unopened and unread. He'd been able to bullshit his way through the class, earning a low C, enough to pass, like most of his classes. Just doing enough to get by, to get the credit, to get through as he worried about the next poker game, and if he'd be able to pull in enough money to add to his bankroll. He grabbed the top book and looked at the cover. In simple, stark letters it read Giles Goat Boy, which he was supposed to have read for his Myth and Legends class. The teacher had been excited about teaching it, spoke about it the same way he would talk to people about finding a poker tell on another player and using it to open up about how he would play against him. He lay down on his bed, flipped on the bedside light, and started to read. And that's chapters 2 and 3 of All In. I've decided to add ads, and here they are. Believe it or not, kids, this silliness has actual real sponsors. Our first sponsor is Graze.com. Graze gives you healthy snacks sent to your house. You can have them delivered weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, and your first box is free if you use the code CORYS3R5B. Our second sponsor is Bombas. Bombas socks are some of the best socks in the world, and remember, for every pair you buy, they donate a pair to a homeless shelter or other worthy cause. Just go to bombas.gotocloud.org/SF30. That's right, those are our ads. Go check out our sponsors. If you're listening to this and don't know about my other podcasts, I also do Crazy Comics and Stories, which is over at crazycomics.solitairerose.com. It's where my friend Joe Ryder and I and our occasional friend Jin Wicked join in and talk about comics, comic book history, our history with comics. We do comic reviews. It's a comic book podcast. On the same feed, I do a solo podcast called Solitaire Rose Radio, where I talk about comic book history, interview people I know, some of which are connected with comics, some of which are not. Next week, I have an interview going up with Terrence Greep, comic book writer, who is also the local professional wrestler here in the Twin Cities, Spider Baby. And we talk about his wrestling career and a little about what he's doing in comics with the character of Spider Baby. And then the latest podcast is the Weekly News Update. I did a weekly news parody back from 1996 to 2006 that gained a little notoriety. I was able to put together a couple pilots with some radio networks. They didn't pan out. Eventually I ended it because my schedule was too busy and it wasn't fun anymore. Looking at this election season, it's fun again, so every week I do a podcast, 10 to 15 minutes, making fun of what's going on in the news. That's at weeklynewsupdate.solitairerose.com. If you like this podcast, please let me know. Please feel free to share information about it on social media, on the fire-breathing Twitter machine, on Facebook, anywhere that you're letting people know about things you like, let them know if you like the podcast. Let me know if you like the podcast. Go ahead and send me your notes, send me criticism, send me praise. I read it all. I take it in. I am editing this novel as I'm recording it. I've found that this is a really good way for me to just go through and make sure that everything in the novel is set the way I want before I turn it into an ebook and have it available on Amazon. I'll be back in 2 weeks with the next part of All In.